from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning. Thanks there, Shirley. It is May 2nd, 2017. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We broadcast live every morning from the beautiful Hill Country. Every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 o'clock Central, sometimes a little longer, depends on how verbose I get and the guest. And tomorrow, Andrew Goss in The Real World of Money, all about the gut and the biome, the human biome thing in our gut. And that's on Thursday, open phone Friday. And next hour, longtime friend and a really good one, Dr. Ken Sutter, and we're going to do the liver gallbladder flush thing made easy. He came back from Vietnam, Agent Orange, years ago, and just saved his life doing these things, and his story's pretty amazing. He's been on from time to time, and so if you ever thought about doing a liver gallbladder flush, and you read some of these books, it's pretty complicated, but he says, you don't need to do all this stuff. Let me just teach you the down and dirty way, if you will. So we'll do that next hour, and it'll be fun to talk to Dr. Sutter. So if you'd like to be on the show anytime, you know, the number is always here, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com, patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Up in Jersey is a doc who is, his name is Joel Furman. He has been out of medical school probably 25 years, University of Pennsylvania Medical School, doctor, nutritionist. He travels around the world. He talks. He writes books. And he has a new thing out that we'll give a lot of plugs to because it's real pretty that they sent me, and thanks for that. The Eat to Live Quick and Easy Cookbook I have right here in front of me. Dr. Furman, good morning. Boy, it's a beautiful book. Lots of colors and great recipes. Well, I haven't tried any, but they sure look yum.
They are. Well, thanks, Patrick. Great to be here with you today and excited to talk to you and your listeners.
Yeah. So how are things with you? You travel a lot?
I do. I travel pretty much all over the country. I speak at medical conferences and health conferences, and I have my own getaways where people come for a week at a time to learn how to eat healthy and make it taste delicious. I just did it last week. I did a Whole Foods market. Took 100 of the most overweight and sickly patients and put them in a hotel with me for a week. And we had most people lost between 10 and 20 pounds in 1 week. And we showed them, and I did cooking classes, live classes with them, and showed them how to make healthy food taste great. And I lectured to them. I showed them how they can never have a heart attack, not get a stroke, not get dementia when they get older, never get reverse their diabetes, drop the weight, get off their blood pressure medications, get off their cholesterol-lowering drugs. Because, you see, when you normalize your blood pressure and you normalize your cholesterol without medications, the protection you get is 100 times more protective than taking a drug, which gives you almost a little bit, only like 10% protection, only a little, gives you almost, there's almost nothing for you. The point is that nutritional excellence is powerful stuff. Food is more powerful than drugs, and people can control their health destiny. And I go around the country doing events and lectures to doctors, to diabetic associations, to hospitals. And I work with various hospitals running these programs to educate people so they know they can get reverse their diseases through nutrition, not through medication.
Uh-huh. So on the program you did with Whole Foods, that's pretty cool. 100 people, they were overweight. And what were some of the big changes you had them make? Was it, look, according to your work, you're not into a lot of grains per se, right? White potatoes, but more legumes and vegetables, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Actually, I made up an acronym where people can quickly remember the most powerful anti-cancer, longevity-promoting foods to remember to include them in their diet each day. and the acronym is G-BOMBS.
G-BOMBS.
G-BOMBS. G-B-O-M-B-S. Mm-hmm. And they are greens, mm-hmm. beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds.
Huh.
Now, so people try to eat like beans every day. They try to eat some green vegetables every day. They try to eat some seeds every day. Pick any one of those foods, and I can give you, for example, like flax seeds. Let's take that.
Mm-hmm.
Lowers blood pressure as powerfully as medications do, just 2 tablespoons a day. Women who have breast cancer eating some flax seeds every day had a 71% decreased risk of dying of breast cancer over that 10-year period. We're talking about incredible superfoods that have magnificent effects to protect disease. And we put together a dietary style with a portfolio of all those foods that have the protect your heart and protect your brain and protect your blood pressure. That's the magic occurs. We make our body the miraculous self-healing body. In other words, what I'm saying here is that heart attacks and strokes are not natural, and breast cancer and prostate cancer are not natural. These are the result of our modern diet and modern nutritional ignorance. And I give people the knowledge and the ability to control their health destiny and not be sick and not have the things happen to them that happens to other Americans.
Is it drfurman.com?
Yes, drfurman, drfurman.com.
So we'll plug that one here. If you'd like to ask a question, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So we talked about heart attacks. Generally, when people speak of heart attacks, they're talking about the classic atherosclerosis, correct? But even though it could be myocardial infarction, which is a lot of heart attacks too, but that's a different.
No. Myocardial infarction is the medical term for heart attack. Myocardial infarction means heart attack.
But isn't that's something in the heart muscle rather than clogging up the arteries?
No, that's not true.
Really?
Myocardial infarction means that you had a clot in your heart, and that's a heart attack. So heart attacks and myocardial infarction are synonyms. They mean the same.
Hmm.
And so the heart, you're talking about cardiomyopathies or... But almost all heart attacks are caused by a clot that forms inside the blood vessel, and it forms from atherosclerosis, and that's 99% of heart attacks. You have a fissure or crack or defect in the plaque, and it forms a clot, and that clot obstructs the artery. If the clot travels to the brain, it causes an embolic or ischemic stroke.
So the actual clot that's getting into the muscles or the brain?
The clot that obstructs the blood flow in the artery that goes in the heart, the artery in the heart or the artery... or the vessel going to the brain that causes heart attacks and strokes. So
many people over the years have suggested that this clogging of the arteries is more of a metabolic syndrome with more grains, insulin, blood sugar, inflammation, plaque coming in, covering it up, other than high cholesterol.
Well, I mean, obviously, you've got people all giving all kinds of crazy information now. High cholesterol plays a role, but so does, of course, the glycemic load of the food, which raises insulin, and insulin promotes atherosclerosis and ages you faster, and it also promotes the spread of cancer. So what I'm saying is that all these things are true, but some people try to focus on just one aspect and not in total recognize that all these things contribute to heart disease, both the excessive amount of saturated fat, but also sugar and processed carbohydrates also are a major component of heart disease too. And some people are saying, well, eat all the meat and butter you want, but just don't eat the sugar and the white flour. And other people are saying, well, you can eat the white rice and the white potato and the white flour, but then don't eat the meat. And the reality is that everything plays a role. And the foods, and we have to eat a diet that's both lower in animal products and lower in those processed high glycemic carbohydrates, because all these things play a contributory factor in the development of heart disease and cancer.
So you're not a fan then of even good, grass-fed, saturated fat stock, either meat or butter or cream, something like that with no chemicals and stuff. So you think that that's dangerous for the body?
Well, I mean, it's not even a question of thinking or believing. It's a question of what do the studies show. And we have to give more credence to studies that go on for many, many years that look at thousands of people. For example, a study published in 2014, just a few years ago, followed 6,000 people between the ages of 50 and 65. And they followed these people for 18 years. And those eating more animal products in their diet had 4 times the risk of cancer and 75% increased risk of dying over that 18-year period because they had more animal products. And these studies are done on people who are in, you know, in countries like Uruguay and Australia, where they eat grass-fed beef. And we know the mechanisms via which the excess animal protein drives up hormones like IGF-1 that causes aging of the brain and weakening of the blood tissues and predisposes us to diabetes more. So what I'm saying is that you get all kinds of opinions, and your doctor, and you can get people on your show, some person selling this, some person saying that, and who does a people person believe? And I'm the I'm president of the Nutritional Research Foundation my whole life and was reading all the literature on this subject and want to give people proper informed consent. And I can say with clarity that it's irresponsible and not even, and they can't possibly be promoting diets high in animal products anymore because they have too many studies done on thousands of people. I mean, here's a study done on 85,000 women and 44,000 men followed for more than 20 years. Where 43% increased risk of death, comparing low-sugar diets high in animal products compared to low-sugar diets lower in animal products higher in vegetables. The high vegetable diet makes you live longer. So the point is that almost all nutritional scientists worldwide now, almost all non-commercially affiliated nutritional scientists, including the World Health Organization, the National Institute of Cancer Research, and the World Cancer Research Fund, are recommending that people eat a diet richer in unrefined plant foods, beans and nuts and vegetables and less animal products and less processed foods and less high glycemic carbohydrates. In other words, those high glycemic carbohydrates, the white bread, that bagel, that pizza, you know, that croissant, that cookie, those are cancer-causing foods, and they cause heart attacks and strokes, and they cause depression. They're linked to increased risk of depression. I'm not saying those foods aren't exceedingly dangerous. I'm saying we have to give people proper informed consent.
Right,
they
got
to look at all the data. Not just, you know, so many diets appeal to what people want to hear. They want to make their book more palatable to people. They want to make us believe it's a fad or a trick or a gimmick. It's so easy to do. You just cut out sugar. But it's not that simple. People have to be really educated here.
Well, I agree with people we talk to. I think it's fair to say, with all respect to the pure paleo people, that is definitely a fad, was a fad, or is a passing fancy, just in the people that we've talked to, I think. But what do I know?
It's a fad. You know, people have a hypothesis, and then we have to say, well, it's okay to come up with a hypothesis, but the question is, what does the studies show that, what, you know, if we look at as much, all the data on that and all the testing, what does it really show? What do long-term studies show? And the long-term studies look at hard endpoints versus soft endpoints.
Hard and soft? What's that?
Well, a soft endpoint might be you followed this diet for a year and you lost weight and your triglycerides went down, your diabetes numbers looked better.
Right.
It looks like you're healthier after a year, but I could feed people Twinkies or cookies, nothing but they won't eat as much food because they're sick of eating Twinkies all day, and their blood pressure might lose some weight on it. But then you can say, well, what if they eat the Twinkies for 10 years? Now we see people dropping dead. So in other words, the hard endpoints are things like cancer diagnosis or death or stroke or heart attack. So we're talking about hard endpoints have more validity, more power, and long-term studies have more power, and large numbers of people have more power. And we look at the longer studies that use hard endpoints, we can see there's unquestionably the data is completely irresponsible to be advocating a diet with so many animal products and restricting beans, like many of the paleo advocates.
Yeah, I know. The bean thing never got. Dr. Joel Furman, it is May 2nd, 2017. So just on the flip side of the paleo people say, So when we see these studies of Dr. Furman of this, so many people, and they're pretty impressive studies over long periods of time, right? Mentioned, right? But is it very possible that in these studies, that in the United States, now you mentioned around the world and it's different because most of them do eat clean, but in the United States, wouldn't it be possible that the dairy or the meat that these people were eating, I would say it's probable that they're eating beef that is fed GMO corn, there are antibiotics, there's stuff in the meat, and these animals are not raised properly, they're not fed the right food, and that could really jimmy or tilt a study in the wrong way, could it not?
No.
Why?
That's another myth promulgated by people who want to eat more meat.
Because
like I said earlier, that there's not one study, there's scores of these studies done around the world.
Right.
And the ones that we have done in other countries where they have grass-fed beef do not show any different results from the ones shown in that are done in this country that using. And most of the studies aren't even done in the United States. You know, most studies, this is a published study from British, so we're talking here about Australia, we actually get most of our grass-fed beef from Australia. Countries like Uruguay, which are the home of the gaucho, which have cowboys, and they all have grass-fed, all their meat is grass-fed, have some of the highest heart attack and cancer rates in the world. And we see that breast cancer incidence corresponding with stroke rate goes up in countries that have more dairy products, and it doesn't matter. And we have to see the same results as we structure country to country. And we also see that these hormones raise from the animal protein in the animal product, not from the level of saturated fat or the omega-3, omega-6 balance in the meat. In other words, what I'm saying right now is that for prostate cancer, for example, skim milk is more prostate cancer causing even than whole milk. That egg whites might be even more prostate cancer causing. So it's the protein concentration and the excessive amount of animal protein that people are consuming that increases the risk, that causes the premature death. And cutting back from a cleaner source of animal protein, it's not the dirt, it's not the antibiotics given. The residual amount of antibiotics is almost not even detectable in the meats. So yes, I agree that those natural animal products, being small omega-3 rich animal products like lizards and fish and snakes and frogs and would be beneficial source of animal products, yes. But even when you see that in the studies, the outcomes don't change significantly because it's the excess consumption of animal protein that shortens lifespan, which we see happen in the natural world, too, with the predator-prey relationship.
So,
with predators, even in the cats eating the rabbits, the cats, if they eat too many rabbits, get too much protein, it shortens the lifespan. So because nature put a system of control in there so they don't decimate their prey population. The predators don't decimate the prey, so they become extinct themselves.
So Dr. Furman, you're saying that then the meat with the studies is not necessarily the cholesterol Framingham kind of story of years ago, but more the hormones and that kind of thing, which is dangerous. Is that what you're saying? And then I say
well,
yes
I'm
or no.
I'm saying not quite. I'm saying
okay.
That
well, let's do. We need to do a quick break, and then you can explain exactly. What
sure.
You're saying on that. Okay. Dr. Joel Furman, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. If you'd like to join the show, do it. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these are Thrival links. Take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com. I had a nice little teaspoon of this pristine Andreas seed oils of coriander oil today. And there's a German fellow called Andreas Wecker, and he works with Stephen Huber, the One World Way guy. And Andreas was a gold medal winner for Germany and just literally almost killed himself using steroids and all kinds of things that the Germans gave him so they would make sure he wins. You know how they want to win. And he got turned on to some pure, freshly pressed flaxseed, just in a little bit of press, so there was no oxidation whatsoever. So he's created these presses, and he can do these oils at below 100 degrees, virtually no friction, no heat. He's had him test it. He has the, which ones did he test? He tested black cumin seed oil, zero oxidation, and the flax was 0.0003, three zeros. I would suggest that a lot of flax oils out there are rancid, as even the good ones. They could be because of the process, because of the heat, because of the way they're bottled, because of the way they're handled. Possibly, I'm not saying they are, but if you really want to get some oils and you like to get some of these guys in there, the 3, 6s, 9s, there's a pretty good selection of Andreas seed oils. They all come in Myron glass. These are obviously totally organic seeds that they use, and pretty amazing that you can try these guys. And there are flax, there is black cumin seed, black sesame oil. I put some of that on my hair last night, black sesame oil. A lot of people like to put sesame oil on their feet as well. Coriander oil, flaxseed oil, which is the most yummy flax ever I've ever had. Just sunflower and pumpkin oil, also hemp oil, sunflower oil. Now, generally, we don't recommend these kind of oils because when you go to the store, if you get a sunflower oil in a clear bottle and you don't know how it's been processed, you have no idea. I think these are dangerous, just my opinion. But these are, it's a whole different deal. Andreas Seed Oils on the One World Way banner right on the front page of our website.
In this country, the sulfur levels have been dropping. There was an alarm that went out to the Congress, and this was in 1932 or 34 when this big warning came out. Mineral quantities have been dropping in the U.S. for quite a while, and especially as farmland got worn out. Notable of things was the sulfur, and if you had been eating high sulfur foods all of your life, you may be getting enough sulfur, but we're not. And the sulfur content in foods is way low. And really, you need sulfur. The number one thing that sulfur does is it detoxifies the cells.
Thank you, George. George Altgeld on a previous show. He's a biologist, chemist, and knows a lot about agriculture. The number one thing, he says, is sulfur detoxifies the cells. This is pure sulfur. Very few of them are. Three prices, three locations, United States, Canada, and worldwide. Click and order, see the ad right-hand side on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
Good morning, Dr. Joel Furman is here. We have some interesting emails we're going to get to before he leaves. Kenneth Sutter up at 10 o'clock this morning. Dr. Furman's been at this a long time. University of Pennsylvania, didn't start medical school till he was about 29. And this Eat to Live Quick and Easy Cookbook is really beautiful. And Doc, just in the last 3 or 4 months, I've been getting more beans in my diet. And I do really well on beans. So I really appreciate getting this book from your PR people. It's a big one because it's got a lot of really nice recipes in here for beans. It looks like, anyway. I haven't tried any of them, but because, you know, beans, I mean, if you just put them in a pot and just cook them. Before we get to that question on the bean thing, I'll get back to the beans in a second, but I'd like to understand your conjecture on the meat and the hormones rather than just the, is it different from the Framingham? High cholesterol clogs up the arteries and that kind of thing.
Well, just in mind, the Framingham study, the Nurses' Health study, doesn't just show talk about cholesterol. For example, like you just said, that the Nurses' Health study and the Framingham work showed that women who ate beans, for example, had much lower rates of breast cancer.
Huh.
And the most strong relationships they pointed out was both the relationship between the consumption of nuts and seeds and lower heart attack rates and sudden cardiac death, and the relationship of bean eating and lower rates of cancer. So it established these relationships, and as other studies, hundreds of studies also supported those same relationships, that eating more nuts and seeds reduces death and extends lifespan, and eating more beans are linked to longer life in almost all populations, but we call them the blue zones around the world, where they have higher numbers of centenarians, people live over 100, are all related to the consumption of beans and lower consumption of animal products. But to answer your question about the hormones, I wanted to make that clear.
Yeah.
That it's not the hormones in the meat I'm talking about.
No, I understand.
I'm talking about
messes,
it's the hormones in our own body, that when you eat excessive amounts of animal protein, that our body produces more hormone, more IGF-1 or insulin-like growth factor 1, is produced by our own body in response to the high input or the high flood of animal protein into the bloodstream after a meal.
Yeah.
We produce more IGF-1. And higher levels of IGF-1 in the human bloodstream are linked to higher rates of cancers, breast, prostate cancers, and aging of the brain, shrinkage of the brain, dementia, and, of course, early death. So we're talking here about diets that are higher in protein and are linked to shorter lifespans, higher rates of cancer. So it's not the hormones in the animal products. It's the hormones we produce. Just like when we eat sugar or we eat white bread or bagels, we produce more insulin in response to that high glycemic amount of sugar flooding the bloodstream. Insulin's a hormone, like an IGF-1 stands for insulin-like growth factor 1, which is shaped like insulin, binds to the insulin receptor. They're both fat storage hormones that make us grow fat more. They promote cellular replication, thus making us grow more and have more risk of cancer growth going on in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Also, these hormones promote angiogenesis, which means the growth of blood vessels, and fat sequesters new blood vessel growth to support its growth. And cancer cells secrete very powerful angiogenesis promoters, so the blood vessels grow into them to support their growth. And the beans and the mushrooms and the onions say, no way, Jose. They are anti-angiogenic. They're anti-fat storage. They say, no way, Jose. I'm not letting you put fat on your body. No way, Jose. I'm not letting you facilitate the growth of cancer like these hormones do. So they have anti-hormonal effects and anti-fat storage effects. And by the way, the anti-fat storage effects saying, no way, Jose, they say it in Spanish. No way, Jose. They're saying it in Spanish as they say it.
Now you say it. Oh,
yeah.
And our bodies know Spanish. So what's up with the onion and the mushrooms? Talk about that. Are onions that really, you actually have it as part of your little acronym, G-bombs. I mean, that's got to be a pretty important food to you, Dr. Furman, to put it in there.
Absolutely. People have no idea,
huh.
No idea that eating a little bit of raw onion a day on your salad. Studies show that between 55% and 88% reduction of common cancers just from the regular including of onion in your diet.
What's up with
that? Whoever thought that the onion would be so protective?
What does it have in there that cancer doesn't like?
It's these organosulfide compounds. You know, when you cut the onion and it makes your eyes tear and burn?
Yeah.
It's forming sulfenic acid, and a chemical reaction is occurring as you're slicing the onion to form these beneficial compounds. They're high in these special types of organosulfides that are very protective against disease. And you know that, let's take, for example, I take that onion or the leek or the scallion, and I plop it into a bowl of soup to cook it. Now, because I plopped it into the soup, the heat of the soup is going to deactivate the enzyme. The enzyme is called alliinase, A-L-L-I-I-N-A-S-E, alliinase. It's a heat-sensitive enzyme that's forming the anti-cancer compounds as the wall of the onion is crushed and the enzyme is mixed in with the sulfur. The point I'm making right now is when you make the soup, you have to blend or chop the onion finely first and then add it to the soup. If you put it in the soup before you blend it or chop it, you can deactivate the compound. You've got to form the anti-cancer compounds, and then you can cook it. The soup cooking won't destroy the beneficial anti-cancer compounds, but you would have inhibited their formation if you heated it before the onion was blended or sliced. The same thing is true with some of these cruciferous greens. The methodology via which to cook the food, the order of blending versus cooking or cooking versus blending, plays a huge role that's why putting a little scallion on your salad or a little raw red onion on your salad and chewing it raw in your teeth has beneficial effects to form nitric oxide and to form these beneficial compounds. So yes, I'm saying that these foods are incredibly protective against disease if we utilize them correctly, and people have to know this stuff. I mean, how could a person knowingly not consume flax seeds or chia seeds in their diet each day if they know that they reduce risk of prostate and breast cancer by more than 50%? By just including that one little tablespoon of seed in your diet each day. This is nutritional information that our public has to have available to them.
Dr. Joel Furman, so on the onions, so go over that again about the, 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 the slicing it up and dicing and all that before and the difference, because that was interesting, but I didn't quite get that. Yep.
Okay, let me, and what I'm saying with regard to onions right now
right.
also corresponds with green cruciferous vegetables like kale or bok choy or cabbage or watercress or arugula.
Okay.
I'm saying that the enzyme in onion is called alliinase, and the enzyme in these raw cruciferous greens is called myrosinase.
Myrosinase.
And what I'm saying is that these foods are rich in powerful longevity-promoting anti-cancer immune system-building compounds. They're very rich. But the compounds are not in the food yet. The components of the compound are in the food, but they're formed in a chemical reaction as the food is chewed or blended. So as you chew that onion in your mouth, or as you chew that kale or that broccoli in your mouth, you break open the cell wall. And in little packets in the outer cell wall can house these enzymes, and these packets are opened up by chewing, allowing a chemical reaction to occur in your mouth that forms these powerful anti-cancer compounds. With regard to the green vegetables, the anti-cancer compounds that are formed are called isothiocyanates, or ITCs. In regard to the onion scallion family, the compounds are called organosulfide compounds. And these compounds have very powerful anti-cancer effects. And I'm saying that if you just cook the vegetable without cutting it up, you will, over a period of minutes, 3 to 4 minutes, you'll actually increase the absorption and availability of these compounds. But as you cook it past 5 minutes, the enzymes are deactivated. And as you approach 10 minutes, the enzymes are wiped out.
So you get that broccoli nice and green quickly, and you're done.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or you eat it raw, or you cook it a little bit. But here's the thing. If you want to put bok choy and broccoli rabe or mustard greens in your soup, and you want to put onions in your soup and cook your soup with your beans for 2 hours, the way you can still make those anti-cancer compounds, make them retained in the soup, is by taking the green vegetables and the onion or scallion or leek raw and blending it up in the Vitamix or blender while it's still raw.
Yeah.
And you'll cause this chemical reaction to occur. You'll form sulfenic acids. You'll form the ITCs. It'll make your eyes burn. It'll smell up your kitchen because you're blending it raw. Once these compounds are formed, then you pour that slurry into the soup to cook. And the cooking won't deactivate those compounds. It would have inhibited their formation because it would have deactivated the enzymes if you cooked the food before it was blended.
Hmm.
But once you blend the food and you form those protective compounds, now you can cook it in the soup, even leave it in the soup for an hour or two to cook. It's not going to deactivate those compounds.
That's cool. What a great idea.
Did you follow it more?
Yeah, I got you. May 2nd, 2017. Around here, we need people to talk to us like we're a small child or a golden retriever, you know, because it's just the way it helps. So you did a good job there. Dr. Joel Furman, May 2nd, 2017. So let's talk about your research on science of legumes, beans. Why does the body like them? What do they do for our health? What's going on with beans?
Well, thanks for that question, because I swear, the bean growers should be sending me dollar bills in my mailbox
or something.
You know what I mean?
I understand. There's not a good bean lobby out there, Doc.
There's not a way. Why are bean people sending me money? I swear. They actually get some credit for this.
Okay.
Right. The point is that beans, from a numerous ways we could measure, if we take all carbohydrate foods and put them on a hierarchical scale of quality, we have to consider the fiber content, the micronutrient content, the anti-cancer ingredients like inositol pentacis phosphate, IP5, which is rich in beans' anti-cancer effects. And their glycemic effect, because they are absorbed into the bloodstream so slowly, they have such slowly digestible starches that they put carbohydrate into our tissues without raising insulin. It's the insulin response that is the defect that causes the disease, the heart disease and the cancer from excessive carbohydrate. And beans give you carbohydrate without causing the insulin response, because it's like dripping the carbohydrates into your bloodstream in like an IV drip over 3 to 4 hours, as opposed to them rushing in every 3 to 5 minutes, like when you eat sugar or a bagel. The other thing is, beans have the highest amount of resistant starch of any other food. The word resistant starch means it's resistant to enzymatic degradation. That means the body can't break it down through enzymes. The body has to break down the starch from bacteria. And beans become a support of food that actually functions as a prebiotic. They support the growth of healthy bacteria in the gut.
Huh.
they lead to the beneficial microbiome. When you eat beans and greens and onions for the to support a beneficial microbiome, you get a different effect from eating probiotics and taking bacteria and fermented foods. The different effect is the microbiome lives there more permanently. It adheres, it becomes a biofilm that adheres to the villi in the small intestines. Thus, that biofilm development causes, when you eat oatmeal, when you eat a mango, when you eat a banana, when you eat any food, it reduces the speed at which glucose enters the bloodstream. It lowers the glycemic effect of other foods you eat that aren't beans. So when you eat, when you're a regular consumer of beans, you lowered the glycemic load of your entire diet, even foods that you eat that are not as low glycemic as beans, because of the effect of the bacteria buildup and the adherent biofilm that develops from being a regular bean eater.
That's pretty cool.
Scientists call that the second meal effect.
That's pretty cool. So do you think it's necessary we want to get the beans at the health food and natural food store dry, soak them? Do you sprout them? Sometimes I've got some beans, like lima beans, to try to make them, and I could never get them soft. So what am I doing wrong?
Well, number one, I'm saying you can buy them. Certainly, it's more economical to buy them dry and then soak them and then cook them. That's more economical. It saves people money.
Sure.
To buy them in cans or in boxes is more expensive, but they're still good. They're still good food. And they
so
don't
the organic ones in the can, they're fine.
Yes, they're fine. You get them at Whole Foods, and Whole Foods makes them in boxes, too.
Yep.
You know, but the point that I'm making is that even the bean liquid that you get out of that can or box shouldn't be thrown away. That bean liquid is called aquafaba. That itself has nutritional benefits. It can be whipped up with an egg beater and made into a foam, and you can mix it in ice creams. You can make it in a quiche. You can put it into the soups. It's good for you, and it's good that you don't have to waste that. Now, you can also make your own beans less expensive by soaking them overnight, pouring off the stirring, agitating them a little, pouring off the water, and then cooking them.
Mm-hmm.
And a big thick bean, like a red kidney bean, you have to cook for 2 hours. But a little, like a split pea or an azuki bean, you can cook for 30 minutes. But usually we put them in the soup. We put the fresh vegetable juice and the beans in the soup. We let it cook for a couple of hours. As long as we take the greens and the onion and we blend it, we can add that to the soup after. We can get the bean and start to cook with the water first. And while that's cooking, we can start preparing the rest of the soup, juicing the vegetables, putting the vegetable broth in, cutting up the onions, chopping up your mushrooms. You know, we could do other things. And then you let it sit for a while. And you know what I do once that soup is cooked? I make a giant pot of it. I put it in the refrigerator, the whole giant pot. You know, I'll take soup out for that night. But so the next morning, I pull it out of the top shelf in the refrigerator when the soup is cold, and I'll put it out into 10 different containers, plastic containers, in my refrigerator so I can grab it to go to work with me for that day. So I have the bean soup already made for the whole week on the weekend.
I guess then when you're going to warm up the soup, if you wanted to, if you're a home doc, you could even chop up some other leeks or something like that and put them on top too, couldn't you, on the top of the soup?
Yeah, I put some kale chips on top. Yeah. I put some flaxseed crackers on top. I put some shredded, I put some chopped raw red onion on top sometimes. I heat it up really quickly, throw some things on. You got a little salad, a nut-based dressing, a handful of nuts. You got a piece of fruit for dessert. You got your whole meal because your whole lunch is already made for the week, because lunch is the most important meal of the day because you're out of town. You're away from your home. You're tempted to eat other foods. You want to eat something that's going to sustain yourself and not make you want to eat other foods and be tempted to eat junk. So you eat a heavy bean dish. And that's the good thing about beans. They make you feel full, and the calories sustain you, and they take so long to digest that you're not going to be hungry in the afternoon after eating a nice bowl of bean soup or a chili or a dish made with a lot of beans in it.
So, Dr. Furman, you had mentioned the insulin and the grains and the carbs, you know, the processed
right.
carbs that aren't good. So then you then are in that league with the people that suggest the metabolic syndrome kind of thing, where you raise the insulin too much with whatever it be, maybe even brown rice or,
right.
you know, and then what does that do? Then raises the insulin, and that could then inflame the arteries, and then the cholesterol and the plaque come in and try to repair it. Is that the model you think goes on with the too many processed carbs?
Yes, I mean, you oversimplified it
a
bit.
Okay, well, you know, yeah.
But that was, yes, basically, what you're saying is correct, but you left out the part that when you eat more of those foods, there's a few things that are happening.
Okay.
One, that you're creating more oxidation, more inflammation,
mm-hmm.
and the oxidation causes chronic inflammation. It's the chronic inflammation that leads to the deposition of cholesterol, because the cholesterol is like a Vaseline salve to soothe the inflamed blood vessels. And when you eat sugars and high glycemic carbohydrate, it inflames the body and it strips the body away of minerals and antioxidants, which are needed to calm the inflammation down.
Gotcha.
That's where G-bombs come in to play. So yes, those things are true. But the other thing is that you left out which you can't, you know, obviously this is nutritional research stuff, is advanced glycation end products. They're called AGEs, and they cause the diabetic's nerves in their feet to be destroyed, and they can't feel their feet, or it causes them to become blind, or you get kidney failure. AGEs, advanced glycation end products, formed on protein moieties, they attach to our proteins in the body, age our tissues, and create chronic disease. And more AGEs are formed by cooked carbohydrate foods as opposed to eating a piece of fruit. When you eat cooked carbohydrates like bread, and you know, and high, and what you're saying, sugar and croissants and donuts and cookies and crackers and rice cakes and breakfast bars and white rice, all these things raise the glycemic effect in the bloodstream, and the AGEs are formed and become more dangerous. When you mix high insulin with high IGF-1, when you eat them with a protein like a hamburger or a cheeseburger or macaroni and cheese or, you know, a ham sandwich, when we mix carbohydrates with our animal protein foods, it becomes more dangerous, which is why I joke around and I say the American diet has been designed by ISIS to kill people.
Yeah, I understand. So, a point well taken. Okay, this is from Dallas. Is there, say, a list of your favorite foods to include in our diet which would give us the most nutrition we need? And also, what does Dr. Furman think about a ketogenic diet? It's done with plants like coconut oil, avocado salads, and lots of fat.
Okay, well, number one, I do have lists of the 10 best foods and the 10 worst foods, and I have listed the major criteria, what things you should do first, and the first is making the salad every day and making the soup on the weekends and improving your breakfast with flax seeds and chia seeds and whole grains. So, yes, I have the basic list, and I also have that acronym that we already mentioned, GBOMS, which stands for greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds, to be inclusionary into your diet, to put together a diet with a portfolio of foods that have those powerful anti-cancer effects, because each one of those foods has been shown in scientific studies to reduce death from cancer by 50% or more. But what if we put together a diet that includes all those foods simultaneously, that works synergistically? That's when you get the money. We can win the war on cancer in America. This is an opportunity for people really to say no to cancer, to say no to dementia. And then the second part of that question was a ketogenic diet with high fat oils, another theory or hypothesis. Because the hypothesis is based on the fact that if this glycemic effect of carbohydrates is negative, and if we recognize that animal proteins force IGF-1 to raise, which is negative, that some of these people are saying, well, let's just eat fat, because fat doesn't raise insulin, and fat does not raise IGF-1. It was eating over protein and over sugar that does those things. And theoretically, that may be better than the diet Americans are eating. But the problem with that is you're not getting the full phytochemical exposure and these anti-cancer nutrients that are present in those rich, colorful plant foods that also contain carbohydrates. And in the studies, and we have to again go back to the, you know, go back to the videotape, which means we have to say, well, of those that have been tested in long-term studies, not just in a year or two, but what happens when people follow those diets long-term for many years? And that's when we see that, wow, that, you know, there may be some rare cancers where that might be recommended. But overall, people get the most longevity, the highest probability of living past 100 with great mental health and great fortitude when you eat a diet that's richer in phytochemicals and antioxidants. So the high phytochemical antioxidant nutritarian diet beats out the ketogenic diet for longevity with the amount of research that supports its inclusion.
It's drfurman.com, Dr. Joel Furman. So eating the diet that you do, can you tell us, do you know, what's your fasting blood sugar? What does it come in at when you do it?
No, I don't know. I don't even check my blood that much. But I would presume, you know, probably years ago, probably 70, 75. I don't know what it would be. Yeah,
so for your patients, like that's not a too important marker for you?
Well, you know what? It's that blood tests become almost immaterial. Yeah. Doctor visits become immaterial because our blood pressure is very low, our blood glucose is very low, our body weight's very low, our body fat determination is very low.
You kind of know you're okay.
Yeah, you know you're eating right. That's right. You know you're lean. You see your ripped muscles on your stomach. You have a six pack, and I'm in my 60s. My patients have gotten their six packs back in their 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. They're fit. Their cholesterol used to be high. Now they're low. They dropped, in many cases, they've dropped 100 points. Their blood pressure normalizes. They don't need medications anymore. And what I'm saying here is, how do you know if you're protected against a heart attack? And here's how you know. Because you're a normal body weight and you're normal blood pressure without medications. your normal cholesterol without medications, a normal glucose without medications. If you're using medications to cuff to push things down, then you're not going to be free of heart attack and stroke risk. Then you're still at high risk. We have to get to the point where we're normal without the need for medications. That's the key. Yeah. And that's what we achieve with these recommendations, and why I wrote my Eat to Live Quick and Easy cookbook, my 10th book, because I want to take away any obstacle people have to achieving superior health. And so that, and one of the obstacles people have is, I can't cook all day. It's too,
that's
the recipes
right.
are
yeah.
too fancy and too extreme. Let me make it easier and taste good, and so I can do it quick and not spend much time doing it, and then I'll do it. So I say, okay, well, here's another thing I'm going to help you solve the obstacles. I'm constantly giving people the information they need to make this easy, doable, and so there's no possible excuses not to do it.
Leroy writes in for Dr. Furman, I'm on kidney dialysis. Some people say that I should be on a vegetarian diet, but the problem is that most of the healthiest vegetables are forbidden because of the high potassium and or phosphorus content for my kidneys, so my kidneys don't process them as well. Any ideas?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is an unusual condition when people have renal failure or they've blown out their kidney or they've
sure.
gotten on early on dialysis, and they have to work with a dietitian to give them those vegetables that are lower in potassium and phosphorus. And sometimes you leach the vegetables, you boil them in water, you throw the water away, you eat more foods with lower levels, and you have to have a little more nutritional expertise and actually analyze the diet you're eating with more care here to make sure it's
gotcha.
Acceptable for that dialysis. So they need an individual recommendations that I really can't go into over the air.
I understand.
On the radio show. Yeah.
What does your guest believe is the key to avoiding dementia as we age? From Barbara.
We've touched on that lightly. But the brain here is one of the organs in the body that doesn't have its own phytochemical network. I mean, it doesn't have its own antioxidant network. Like the liver and the kidney produces its own phytochemicals, removes free radicals via the antioxidant response element in the cells, in those cells, in the muscle tissues and such. But the brain doesn't have that. The brain needs a constant and ongoing exposure to antioxidants and phytochemicals. And that's why eating blueberries and eating green vegetables regularly and eating tomatoes, and that's why eating these colorful plant foods, like we talked about in the show, the G-bombs, on a regular daily basis, has the effects to protect the brain. So this is it's a anti-dementia diet, as well as achieving vitamin D adequacy and omega-3 adequacy, the walnuts. And I advise people take a little bit of a supplement of DHA and EPA if they're not eating fish, because we've noted that shrinkage of the brain can occur with aging in people who are DHA deficient.
Hmm.
And some vegans, about half the vegans become DHA deficient over time if they don't take a source of DHA. So they're at risk of having brain shrinkage if they're not eating any seafood. And then I recommend people take enough B12, enough vitamin D, and enough DHA to assure these adequacy, and they don't gamble with their health adopting some nutritional guru who is irresponsibly telling them they can just be good as it is without checking their bloodstream or without checking their blood test or making sure they're not deficient in any of these things.
Do most cultures around the world eat some kind of nuts, almonds and walnuts and Brazil nuts and things like that?
I'm not sure about the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But I do know this, that cultures that do eat the nuts have much higher, lower rates of heart attack and death. And even in the Seventh-day Adventist studies in this country, the longest-lived culture in this country is the Seventh-day Adventist who eat less animal products, but the ones that ate nuts and seeds live the longest. And the ones that ate nuts and seeds who were non-vegans live longer than the vegans who didn't eat nuts and seeds in that study. And we've seen that data come up over and over again in the nurse's health study and the physician's health study, that removing nuts and seeds from a diet, trying to achieve these extremely low-fat diets where you take out all the oil and all the nuts and seeds, are not good for overall longevity.
You know,
you have to include those fat from nuts and seeds for maximal longevity.
Right. Barbara talked about the brain, but we've had so many docs over the years on the show that suggest that the brain is really mostly fat, and we need a lot of good fats like coconut oil, maybe avocados, whatever, to keep the brain happy. Do you agree?
No. Yes and no.
Okay.
The sensible part of that is, yes, the brain needs the beneficial fat, especially DHA fat. That part's true. But then when you're stuck in the coconut oil, then I have an objection there. Because the body always has increased longevity and better mineral and better phytochemical exposure when we eat the whole food source of fat, not the processed food source. So if it's walnuts versus walnut oil, you get much more longevity benefits from the walnut versus the walnut oil, and that's been adequately shown in literature, including the PREVAMED study, which showed that when people switched from olive oil to nuts, they got tremendous low rate of heart attacks and increased longevity out of it. So we're talking here about sesame seeds, not sesame oil, flax seeds, not flaxseed oil, coconuts, not coconut oil, that the processed food removes the fiber, removes the protective anti-cancer nutrients, and no legitimate nutritional scientist can ever say that the oil extracted from that food is healthier than eating the way the food, the way nature designed it in its unprocessed state. Totally ridiculous.
In the UK, Paul writes in, could the doctor say that after a year and a half, I was on this kind of a diet, in parentheses, he has the McDougal diet, I don't remember exactly what that is, to rid myself of rheumatoid arthritis, but I was very underweight and feeling quite weak, and I couldn't even get well again, but I did get eating well by eating some liver and steak. So he said by this kind of diet, so I don't know exactly what he was doing.
Right, he's talking about the McDougal diet is a nutritional guru who advocates a very low-fat vegan diet that's high in potatoes and rice and grains and who doesn't recommend a high vegetable-based or high greens and nuts. And his diet is somewhat lower in protein. It's a vegan diet that's lower in fat and protein. And I would say unsafe for young children and toddlers because of the protein and fat deficiencies there. It's not DHA or nutrient adequate. His advice for B12 intake is suboptimal. Optimal leaves people at danger. It can result in brain shrinkage with aging due to DHA deficiencies. And lots of people don't feel well on that diet. They don't do well long term. Like this person had to eat more animal products to feel better because the diet was literally low in protein, too low in protein, was he's not using hemp seeds and beans, and he's not paying attention to those things. He's making believe that a high carbohydrate, low fat diet is best for everybody, and everybody thrives on it, which is just a lie. It's not true. A lot of people don't thrive on that diet, and a lot of elderly people won't thrive on a diet, especially mostly vegan, that's that low in protein. So even though I'm saying animal protein in excess amounts can be bad for you, I'm also saying that some vegan diets people are following or don't have enough protein, because, look, beans are about 26% protein.
Yeah.
Lentils are 27%. Wheat germ is 23%. Tempeh or edamame is 33%. If you do a low-fat potato-based diet with whole wheat bread, there's only 9% protein in potatoes. There's only 10, you know, so the point is, and green vegetables are 30, 40% protein. The point is, if you're going to be on a vegan diet, you can do it successfully. And it does reverse rheumatoid arthritis, by the way, and help with psoriasis. But you have to do it in a way that's best, that works best for you. And a lot of people on the diet this person's discussing right now, this McDougal diet, is not ideal for a lot, is not ideal in general for longevity. It's not, it's not something I recommend.
Daniela, she's also in Europe. A lot of Europeans listening this morning. I enjoyed your show with Joe Cross, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. And Joel, I guess Joe Cross got there with doing a lot of vegetable juicing. Could Dr. Furman talk a little bit more about vegetable juicing, which fruits are preferable in the juice form, and which may be best to be avoided drinking?
Yes, Joe Cross was in the movie. Fat was the producer and star of the movie, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, which I appeared in. And he recovered from autoimmune urticaria, which is a very annoying and serious skin disease. You have chronic itching and redness in your skin through juicing and eating better. And he lost about 80 pounds in the filming of that movie, and other people did.
Wow.
And, of course, I was his doctor in the movie, spurring him on and making sure the juicing was safe. But I was not the person that advocated this 60-day period of being on nothing but juices. He wanted to do that, and I supervised him to assure his safety. But it was not my decision or preference that he go on juices for such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying here now is that I've had thousands of people recover from autoimmune conditions like psoriasis and autoimmune urticaria and those conditions without juicing. They did it by eating right, by getting rid of the junk food of the diet. You don't have to do it by juicing, but juicing could be an adjunctive therapy or can be done for a period of time to facilitate changing the taste buds and re-strengthening that taste and then going on to eating. But you're not going to be on juices the rest of your life and not eating food. And anything you do temporarily is not going to give you permanent health. It's what you do permanently and stick to that's going to result in your health. So I'm saying to you that it's not enough that I think that movie and Joe Cross's work needs to be facilitated, or needs to be, you have to add on my work on the Nutritarian diet on top of that so people maintain those benefits long-term with proper eating and a proper diet style, not just fixing it with juicing, then go back to your old diet or go back to the things you did wrong again. And the juices I recommend people consume when they do juice are usually a mixture of like one-third of neutral liquid like lettuce and cucumber and celery, one-third those high carotenoid foods like carrot, tomato, and beet, and one-third those green cruciferous anti-cancer vegetables like kale and bok choy or broccoli or, you know, or collard greens. So it's one-third, one-third, one-third. If they're using a little blueberry or a little apple or pineapple to sweeten it, the fruit component should be low. We don't want the fruit to be high. We don't want the juice to be too high glycemic. You should just put it, and the carrot and the beet are adding enough sugar to them that you don't need the fruit to the juice. So we're talking about low fruit juicing and using carrot and beet as a fraction, but not as the major portion to keep the glucose, to keep the glycemic effect of the juice relatively low.
I don't think there's any doubt that cultures around the world eat a whole lot more beans than we do in this country, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And but what about this idea, before we go, and I know you got to go, so do we, this idea of, well, you know, in Mexico and other places, Doc, where they go, beans and grains, and it's a complete protein, and that whole meme was out for, what, 20 or 30 years about complete protein. I don't know if people talk about that anymore, about rice and beans.
Yeah, well, you don't have to have complete protein in that meal because the body matches amino acids. And one thing about, there's a beneficial effect of having incomplete proteins that we're talking about here, is that the body makes them complete over time, but because it takes hours to make them complete, the protein enters the bloodstream a little bit at a time over many hours, keeping the hormonal response lower. So we're finding out today, years ago, we used to tell people eat more biologically complete protein. Now we're telling people, yes, eat mostly plants to get more of your protein that's biologically not as complete is actually better for you. So that's the difference in modern nutritional science compared to what people thought 20 or 30 years ago.
Two quick questions from two different people. What do you think about microwaving? Is it okay? And also sprouts. What is your theories about sprouts?
Microwaving is okay to heat or warm foods, but you can overcook foods very easily in a microwave. So if you do it too long, you can dry out and dehydrate the food. So we're talking about preferably wok of food and a little bit of water. Mix it up with some of these walking sauces, like that are made with nuts and vegetables. And of course, the main thing is not to fry foods in oil. When you cook oil, when you fry foods in oil, you form carcinogenic compounds. Even if you inhale the fumes from the deep fryers in fast food restaurants, even breathing in those fats are dangerous to your health. Even working in a movie theater and inhaling the gas from the popcorn oils is bad for your health. The most dangerous thing people can do is eat fried foods or foods that are cooked in oil, especially oil that's overheated and continually cooked. So we're talking here about eating more natural foods that are conservatively cooked, and cooking them less. In soup cooking, where water content is maintained, prevents burning, and too much cooking in the microwave is too drying and burns out the food if you try to cook the food too much. So if you're using the microwave, warm foods, reheat foods, use less time on the microwave than is generally recommended, so foods are slightly undercooked. That's the key.
His 10th book is The Eat to Live Quick and Easy Cookbook. They look like some great recipes. 131 recipes, and it's Dr. Joel Furman, drfurman.com. Doc, thanks a lot for being here.
My pleasure. Great conversation.
Yeah, we had a good time. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye. Well, we're going to talk about your liver, your gallbladder, and all other kind of fun things like that.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, we're going to have fun now this next hour. We're going to do quick and easy ways how to do your liver, gallbladder, flush, and talk to Dr. Ken Sutter. He's the author of a book called The Natural Healing Paradigm. Doc Sutter, you know what I just did? I clicked on his, can't believe this. Oh man. God, I want to get out of here quick. Hold on. Oh man. Oh boy. Man, I just clicked on your, oh man. Hey, Doc Sutter, I just clicked on your link and got some porno. Oh my god. But I don't, can't even close it. I don't like the